You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to episode 73 of the Rex Chapman Show with my super dope homeboy from the Lex Town, Josh Hopkins. What up, Josh?
What's happening, Rex Everett?
How are you, buddy?
How's good, Kentucky? Man, I'm in Kentucky. It was snowing today.
Snowing?
Yeah.
Snowman or anything?
Not quite that kind of accumulation, but a little snow. I mean, it's sledding. That time of year.
Sledding? Yeah,
that's no, because it's not. If there's not accumulation, you can't sled.
What? Who says? Who says?
Mr. Physics? I don't know.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, that makes sense. If there's no snow, you can't sled.
Yeah. Okay, that does make sense. That's good.
Yeah.
That's been the weather report.
Oh. Episode 73, Josh.
Mm-hmm.
Creeping up there. 73. Yeah. Know any famous 73s?
Old school Patriots, John Hanna.
John Hanna.
I mean, yeah. I just remember that as a kid.
Yeah,
that,
73.
Like, Sports Illustrated, he was on.
73.
On the cover
I don't know any 73s. I go Kevin Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Three, I'll go Sedale Threet.
Oh, no wonder he picked that name, that number. Yeah.
Threet. Yes.
Well, I would go just like if I was doing a locker and it was like, oh, you got to remember that it would be Kenny Anderson and Rex Everett Chapman.
Yeah, baby.
forever, my three.
Forever. Oh, thank you, buddy. Sure. You know, something happened in the basketball world. We're witnessing history in the making. LeBron James right now is chasing Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's scoring title, and I can't believe that I'm saying that about anyone in this lifetime. That record seemed, well, it seemed out of reach for any reasonable human, and it was until LeBron James.
He's not reasonable.
No. Yeah. But he did something the other night in a loss that was pretty remarkable. He got 46 against the Clippers in a loss, which gave him 40 points. He made him score 40 points against every team in the league.
He had never
scored 40 against the Clippers, but doing so solidified that position. He scored 40, torched every team in the league for 40 at least once.
Do you think he knew that stat going into the game?
I think he probably did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he just said, I'm gonna do this. That's how good he is, too. It's like today, I'm gonna do it.
I would think in this climate, this social media climate, it would be impossible for him to have not known that going into the game.
Right.
He's pretty on top of things anyway. I would think.
Yeah, he's a history buff of the league. Uh-huh. He stays with it. You know, how old is he?
If this is his 20th year, is this make him 37, 38, I guess?
37, 38 doing that. I looked up to see his stats this year from his second year in the league. You know, mm-hmm. the first year was, you know, you gave him a rookie year, and then he was great from then on.
Yeah.
He was great first year, but then he was all-time great. His first year at age whatever he was, he averaged 27 points, 7.5 rebounds, and 7.2 assists, and shot 47% from the league. From the field. And this year he's averaging 30 points, 29.9, 8.5 assists, and 7 rebounds, shooting 50%. I mean, that every year is like, that's just greatness every year.
Every year.
Not just greatness. You can't get every year. It's kind of like those, you know, Michael fell into the, like, Michael should have won MVP every year.
Right, right.
You know? Yeah. And he should have a whole bunch more. You know, he was the best player in the league many, 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 many years. Now you can argue because there's some real MVP candidates that are 20 years younger than him, but 15. And so you could argue, but I mean, he's still dominating at his
age. Dominating. He's dominating, Josh. And the thing that I find really remarkable is he's found a way to do it really in two different eras. He started, it was a jab step league. It was a jab step league and he dominated that. And now it's a, you know, get in your bag handles league. And he's still dominating that league, has found a way to dominate that league, truly witnessing greatness.
Yeah. You know, and then you see him too, because they're like, oh, he's lost this or that. But you see him get free and the way he dunks, it's like,
still,
he might not, he's got a few jumps left in him each game.
Yes, he does.
Like,
yes, he does.
You get to that point, you know, that point where you get to where, like, I got two jumps in me. He's got five still, two full out jumps. Like, when do you foresee him hanging it up? Because he's showing zero signs of really slowing down.
I don't know. But I do know he's motivated to at least play in the same league as his oldest son, who just made the McDonald's game, which how cool is that? And well deserved.
So cool.
And then on top of that, or in addition to that, our homeboy Jeff Shepard's son, Reed Shepard, made the McDonald's game.
Friend of the show.
Made the McDonald's game, and I'm so happy for that young man. And I about 7 or 8 years ago, I was talking to Shep one summer, and he said, we just played in a tournament in Ohio against LeBron's son, and Reed held his own. And I remember at that point going, okay, now let me keep an eye on old young Reed Shepard. And my gosh, what a high school career he's had in the state of Kentucky. He's going to go to Kentucky next year. And we all love Shep, of course. But I thought that was pretty cool.
He's going to be an NIL magnet.
Oh, my gosh.
Hometown hero comes to the Cats. Here's a better LeBron, because it compares him to his 2010 MVP season at 26 years old. And he's 38 years old now. So I'll start 29.7 points in 2010, 29.7 points this year, 7.3 rebounds then, 8.4 rebounds, 8.6 assists, 7 assists, shooting 50% field goal LeBron was then, and now I guess it's updated, he's shooting 51%.
Wow.
I mean, that's his MVP season in 2010, and that's what he's doing. But I have another great stat I saw online. In Michael Jordan's last season at age 40, this shows you how the league and thinking has changed. He played in all 82 games and averaged 37 minutes, which would lead the NBA right now in minutes. And he played in every game.
Wow.
Yeah, no load management there at 40.
No, and staying up late, gambling, and smoking cigars every night.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that's right or better. I agree.
Yeah,
you know, like the
it's
load
just different.
Management might be something that extends people 3 years. So
I
think
it probably
does. Amazing stat. Amazing.
I'm with you, bud. Real quick, book club. Did you read anything last week?
I didn't. What about you?
No.
Well, that's been book club.
We got a great guest this week, Josh.
I'm excited.
I'm excited too. This is a former teammate of mine from way back when. We've known each other since high school days. Former number 5 pick in the 1990 NBA draft, 15-year NBA veteran, second team All-American for the Flying Illini, and NCAA slam dunk champion, Kendall Gill. What's going on, Kendall Cedric Gill?
What's up, Rex? Hey, can you believe back in 1990 that we think in 2024 that we'd be doing a podcast or all of this stuff that they're doing now?
Not a chance. I was just telling Josh before you came on that, you know, we didn't really even know each other until Charlotte. I mean, we were in the same grade in high school, but, you know, I got to UK. You didn't play as a freshman, right?
Yeah, I didn't really play that much as a freshman.
No. Yeah, didn't play much as a freshman. And then I left as a sophomore. And then 2 years later, or 3 years later, we're teammates in Charlotte. And we actually lived together for a little bit. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember. Because I think I was staying at the Adams Mark Hotel as a rookie. And I asked Rex, I'm like, yo, Rex, you mind if I stay with you, man? I can't do this hotel thing. This hotel is horrible. So Rex took me in, and I don't know, I was over there probably about 3-4 weeks before I got my place. So I appreciate it, man. You and your parents and made me feel at home.
Man, I can't believe this much time has gone by. The other thing that we were talking about, and I'm sure we'll get into more about today's game, is that, you know, we were all young players, myself, you and I were essentially the same age. We had Dell Curry that was, you know, 2 years, 3 years older than us. We all played the same position.
We did.
We could split it up sometimes and play the one here and there, but we all played the same position. Whereas if we played together today, we'd all be playing at the same time.
I know, right? I know. Right? And that was the thing. But you know what, Rex? We did play together at Five Star.
Yeah.
We were on the same
team. That's right.
So when I did go to Charlotte, when Charlotte drafted me, I was wondering, I was like, why the hell are they drafting me? They got Rex, they got Dale Curry. I mean, we all play the same position. Why? Because I thought that I was either going to go to the Denver Nuggets, where Chris Jackson was drafted later on, Mahmoud Abdul-Raul, or I was going to go to the Minnesota Timberwolves, one pick below with Charlotte, because they had Pooh Richardson, they needed a two guard.
Who did they draft, PG?
Felton Spencer.
I guess they took Felton. That's right, from Louisville.
Charlotte drafted me, and I was like, okay, well, I guess I got to go, you know. So,
yeah.
But you know, when I got down there, man, it was all love. Everybody worked together, and you know, it was just a great experience for me.
Yeah,
I got to tell you, Kendall, yeah. Rex and I know each other from Kentucky, but we didn't know each other till we were adults. And I was a huge Rex fan, like follow him around the mall type of guy. I was annoying.
Everybody was a Rex fan, man.
Yeah. Well, that's the follow up question. First of all, I just got to tell you. So I was a huge fan of yours in college. The Flying Illini, you guys were great. You were just such a, just to go back to the old lexicon, so fresh. You had a great haircut. You just looked cool in your uni. You were like a fucking athletic, just the shoulders, and you could just dunk it, shoot it, the whole thing. And I was a big fan. And then Charlotte drafted you. And then I was like, pretty I'll be sure looking motherfucker. I was like, no. We can't have Taylor this time.
He still got it. He's still got it.
I'm just coming back from the barbershop, too. I just got
it.
I want to know when's the first time you remember seeing Rex, hearing Rex come just into your mind, like the first time you saw him, what'd you think? And same for you, Rex, the first time you realized there was a Kendall Gill, what'd you guys think of each other? Do you remember that was?
Well, the first time I saw Rex was at Five Star in Pittsburgh. You know, Rex was probably ranked third in the nation at that time. Nobody knew who I was. You know, I was just a kid that asked his mom to send him to Five Star in Pittsburgh because that's where all the top players want to play. And they put Rex and I on the same team. I still didn't know who Rex was until the All-Star game. You know, I just thought Rex was just a regular baller. But it was me, Rex, Steve Bardo, who I played with at Illinois, a couple more guys. And, you know, when they named the All-Star team at the end of the camp, they said, and the third ranked player in the nation, Rex Chapman. I was like, for real? That guy I've been playing with all weekend. I had no idea who Rex was. So
I know.
I was the very last name that they called for the All-Star game. And that's when I got on the map, you know. And, you know, right after I came back from Five Star, I had all kind of schools calling me and everything. Not Kentucky or anybody like that, but, you know. I had a lot of intention, and Rex has a lot to do with that because we played well together.
Oh man. Well, I know this. Kendall was kind of a late bloomer, and you know, there was so much talent in Chicago and in that area that, you know, you can't, we all know you could essentially take a, make a McDonald's team out of Chicago, New York and Philly every year. But we didn't know that when we were young. So my first experience watching Kendall was, he was just, well, a conscientious defender. And I think that that's the thing that really kind of probably put him on the map, was that he'll go out there and guard you at 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", and was, you know, didn't take a play off. So he, Kendall was kind of different. I built my confidence offensively. That's just the way I was wired. And Kendall did it the other way. And once his offense caught up to his defense, my gosh, he was off and running.
Yeah. Thanks, Rex. Thanks. Yeah. You know, in order to play at Illinois and also at my high school, my coaches just said, you got to defend if you want to get on the floor. And that's how I had to make my bones, so to speak. I had to defend first. I had to learn that first. And then my offense, like you said, late bloomer, it came on later on, you know, and, you know, went on to Illinois. And, you know, my freshman year, didn't play that much. Sophomore year, started sparingly. I remember missing 7 3-point shots at University of Iowa. Lou Henson taking me out of lineup. I lost my starting position. Then they had Marcus Liberty, who is from Chicago.
Y'all had a squad.
Yes, you did.
Yeah. So Marcus was coming in that year, and I knew he was coming in, and, you know, number one.
And he was all Mr. Everything, right? He was supposed to be the next. Yeah.
Right.
He was so on the Sports Illustrated cover at one point or something.
Yeah,
right. He was not just the best of the year. They were saying he's the best to come out in a few years.
Right, yeah, right.
In which he was. But, you know, I knew he was coming in, and everybody was saying, well, Kendall's probably going to be put on the bench. I was like, fuck that, man. So I put in the work over the summer, man, and I came back. I thought when I came back after my sophomore year, my junior year, I thought that I was the best player on the team before the season.
And Nick was on that team.
Nick Anderson was on that team too.
Yeah, Nick was like one of the first guys that I played against that, you know, he was kind of a grown man at age 19. He could post up but he gave me fits.
Sixth grade.
right. Yeah, he was a grown man. So, you know, it's not like I hear you talking and saying, you know, I missed 7 threes. Coach took me out of the lineup. That's just so it's great to hear, because it's refreshing. It lets you, it makes us all remember that, hey, you know, we were not always up here. You know, you had to take your lumps. I wonder what that was like for you. You're playing on a great team. You know, you're taken out of the lineup. Your confidence has to be shook. Mm-hmm. How are you able to hang in there and survive that?
My dad, because, you know, after when I knew Marcus was coming and when I was taken out of the lineup, you know, I thought, when maybe I should transfer, because the future probably won't go well for me here. So I told my dad I was thinking about transferring. He was like, nah, son, we don't do that. We don't run. So you're gonna have to, and these were his exact words, you better stay down there and be a star amongst stars. So that's what I said. That's when I reached the, okay, fuck that.
Yeah.
That's great. You know, that's like a moment you can absolutely look back on and go, this was the moment, because you could have done two things, run or accept the challenge and be great. And you did it right then. Right.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's why, you know, when I see all these kids in the transfer portal, they're just running, man. Yeah. You know, they're not staying there, and they're not, you know, gutting it out and getting better, because they don't know wherever you go, there you are. You know, if you go to the next, you have the same problems.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So, and then it was, you'd have to wait out a year It was, yeah. It was a lot worse then to just go someplace, you know, and there you'd be another year removed and probably not with the talent that you were with. So you weren't getting as good every day. That was the moment. That was the moment you became the, what we knew as Kendall Gill. That's great. It was the pressure of Marcus Liberty coming and you didn't run. You accepted it. And that motivated you. How great is that?
Oh, man, it motivated me. I mean, I had another teammate called Irvin Small, and he used to say, you got to hoop while the hoopers are asleep. And that's exactly what I did. While they were sleeping, I was hooping. I was working on my game. And that's how I was able to make the big jump from my sophomore year to my junior year. And that's the year we went to the Final Four.
Kendall, another t-shirt. You got to hoop while the hoopers are asleep. We're coming out with a good t-shirt line from this.
All right. Good.
Yeah.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
We just had Timmy Hardaway on, and it kind of rings similar. I was telling him that, you know, as like a McDonald's player or whatever, you can go out there and Buffalo guys sometimes into not playing hard, but there's always a Tim Hardaway who didn't make the McDonald's game or a Kendall Gill who didn't make the McDonald's game. And I want to know, Kendall, how much that something like that motivated you, seeing other guys that you knew you were as good at.
Yeah, look,
if not better.
That's perfect. That's a perfect segue into what I'm about to tell you, because Bill Henderson, who was on the McDonald's All-American team with you.
Yep.
Bill and I were really good friends. We played in the same conference in high school.
Skinny Phil, right?
Real skinny.
Yeah.
Phil passed away a few years ago. But
yeah, went to Duke, right? Ended up going to Duke.
Went to Duke. But he was named to the McDonald's All-American team. And we were in the same conference. I got player of the year over him in our conference. I got player of the year over him in the area in which we live. I beat him in the Big Dipper tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then when he got McDonald's All-American, he called me. He was like, "Hey, man, I got named to the team. Did you?" I was like, "Nah, I didn't get named." I got named to the Harold's Chicken All-American team. So fast forward like 4 years, my senior year, when I get named to the UPI All-American team and the AP All-American team, he calls me. And then he says, "Hey, man, I just got named to the Harold's Chicken All-American team. What did you do?" and we started laughing, man.
That's good.
Circle, man. But
that's so good.
But it motivated me, man. You know,
knowing
that here's a guy who I had competed with, who I beat, who got, you know, the accolades and I didn't. But, you know, sometimes it's good to always be the underdog, because it always motivates you to do even more than what you're capable of, you know. So.
And then you came back, and then that season, you guys had a squad and a really, really great season all the way to the Final Four. What did that feel like, you know, playing with it? Plus, I noticed that every player on the team besides Rodney Jones was an Illinois guy. Rodney Jones was Philly. I mean, you guys must have played with each other growing up. There had to be some rapport with a lot of them already, no?
Oh, yeah. We all knew each other from playing with each other since we were 12 years old. You know, and Rodney Jones, he was from Philly, but he really wasn't eligible to play that year. So we were all from the state of Illinois, even the walk-ons.
Wow.
And that was a true Illinois team. I felt like we were the best team in the country. You know, when we lost to Michigan in the Final Four, I did not watch that game until I retired from the NBA. I just couldn't watch it. You know,
I don't believe it.
Yeah, it hurt that much because I knew we were better than everybody else. They just happened to catch us on an off night, you know, and
last second shot too. It was like
last second shot. Yeah, and I, you know, and I still think about that all the time. You know,
I know you do.
Competitor.
Yeah, you know, I was in a state championship game against Marcus Liberty in King High School. I came up short with that one. I came up short with the final.
How crazy was it though that team? You know, you got a suburban team, Rich High School,
Rich Central.
How odd was it that you guys even made that run and got to the final?
Well, you know. We expected it because we were much like the Flying Illini team. Nobody was really tall. I was the tallest person on the team at 6'4". Okay. And we played fast. We played hard. Teams weren't used to us being the way that we were. And a lot of guys don't know that even though we were a suburban team, most of those guys were from the city because we just moved out there. We just moved out to the summer. So we had that player, that city flavor, you know, but we end up playing Marcus Liberty and those guys in the championship round. And you know, you guys know this, it was my fault that we lost. And here's the reason. I didn't know until years later, even when I was in the pros, like games that I lose that are significant games, I can't watch them. So I watch them years later. So even the state championship game, I watched it when I got in the pros. I called my brother up. I was like, you know, man, I got to apologize to you. He says, why? He says, because I was playing the wrong fucking defense the whole game, and I let this guy score 18 points. That's why we lost the championship, you know. And
dude, I'm so with you. I get it. We my senior year, we lost to our arch rival on a last second shot, and I never watched it till I was long finished playing in the NBA. And when I finally did, I was like, this is completely my fault. All of it is my fault. If I'd have just played, you know, harder on four more possessions, just standing around most of the time, we didn't know how hard you could play at that time. Right.
Yeah, we didn't know.
And so, but I feel you. It's just, I'll wake up some nights and be like, damn, I can't believe we lost that game.
No,
high school game.
I feel the same way, man. I can see Sean Higgins getting that rebound over Nick and putting it, you know, and I wake up. My wife is like, what's wrong? I was like, Michigan.
They had a squad too, though. They had a squad, Glenn and Ramil, those guys.
They did have a squad, but I'm gonna tell you, Rex, we walked them the first two times.
Oh, y'all were good.
We blew them out the first time we played them, man. You know,
that's hard. That's hard, though, to beat the team three times. That's tough.
It is, but you know, I think sometimes, and I can say this for myself too. Some of the guys don't feel this way that were on the team, but I wasn't looking at Michigan. You know, and this is a true this is true story about how not to look past people. I was looking past Michigan. I was looking at Duke. I'm like, that's who we're going to win in the national championship.
Yeah.
You know, and unfortunately, we didn't get there because I overlooked them.
It's better than what Larry Johnson said to us, because he said they beat Duke the year before, and he said in the championship game, he said it was totally my fault because I just wasn't playing hard.
Oh, what?
Yeah, he was looking past Duke during the championship game. It's like nothing to look past, Larry. Nothing to look past.
I can't believe Big L said that.
Kendall, when you know, I didn't realize you didn't really ever have you didn't have aspirations really of playing in the NBA until you were in college. probably. I'm not sure I really did either. I didn't know that that was really something you could do. I lived in Kentucky and we didn't have pro sports and all that. But when were you, I guess, when was the first time you realized, even as a kid, that, you know, you were better on the kickball field or a better athlete or you had better touch? Or when was the first time you really remember standing out, you know, athletically?
Yeah, when I was 7 years old and I made the Little League team, but you were required to be 9 years old to make it. And, you know, the coaches had me playing on the south side here at Foster Park in Chicago. They said, okay, this is the team. You guys got to bring your birth certificate. So the next day I bring my birth certificate. They say, you're too young. You can't play. And I was destroyed, man. I went home crying and everything. She's like, well, that's okay. You'll be able to play next year. So that's what I knew, you know.
Okay.
But, still a late bloomer. Actually, Rex, I didn't even like basketball until I moved to the suburbs, man.
Really?
You know, I was a baseball player, football player, and a boxer, you know. And then we moved to the suburbs, and that's when I first touched the basketball. You know?
Wow.
I was 10 years old. So, you know, I didn't even like it at first.
Wow.
How did you but we're going to jump back into this, but since you mentioned it, I really want to know about the boxing. Usually that's like a family member gets you into that or something, somebody that, but like, how did you get into boxing at an early age?
My parents sent us to a daycare center on 83rd and Racine here in Chicago. And at that daycare center, they had boxing. So, you know, I had a coach there. He used to just let me, you know, work pads, work the heavy bag and stuff like that. And then one day, there's this kid, the bully. Everybody in the daycare center is scared of this kid, right? And he used to walk around with, you know, a scowl on his face. He's bigger than everybody else. The coach put me in with him in the ring, and I was scared as hell. I ain't going to lie, man. I was scared. But then, you know, I started working with him and punching him and, you know, using all the skills that the coaches showed me. And then after that, I fell in love with it. And that's the first time I learned how to deal with bullies. You know, it's because, you know, just because a guy, you know, walking around like that doesn't mean he's all that, you know. But that's where I fell in love
with great.
The sport of boxing. When I was a kid, Muhammad Ali lived here in Hyde Park. On 47th Street, and I was walking with my grandmother on 79th and Sangam on 79th and Halsted, and Muhammad Ali was standing in front of Woolworths. He was standing in front of Woolworths talking to a lot of people. I looked up at him. I thought I saw God, man. I was like, that's Muhammad Ali, you know.
Wow.
I'm walking. Muhammad Ali just is right there, you know.
Wow. So,
when
that's
I just
amazing.
Beat Muhammad Ali, then I just start boxing, man. You know, and that's the way it was.
Eventually, you went pro.
Yeah. So I went pro after I retired from basketball because I really wanted to be a boxer, you know. But then when we moved away to the suburbs, there was no more boxing gym for me, you know. So I had to play baseball, football, basketball is where I picked up basketball. And when I retired, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go back and do this. And I had studied mixed jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai boxing for like 6 years before I retired. So I was already into combat sports.
Were you sparring and whatnot while you played? Like in the summer, were you still doing?
In the off-season when I was sparring jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai boxing. I can tell you what, The first time that my jiu-jitsu coach threw me in with somebody, he threw me in with a girl. She beat the living crap out of me, man.
I bet she did.
she submitted me. She made me tap out, all that. That's why.
Wow.
Respect the sport because she was a lot smaller than me. But after that, I went on and after I retired, I decided to take boxing seriously. Had 4 fights, and wanted to fight Jake Paul. Recently, over the last 2 or 3 years, but they don't want to fight me because, you know, they don't want it.
They got a money train going right now, and they don't want you to derail it.
So
they picked Nate Robinson to fight and everything. But I told Tim Hardaway, Tim Hardaway and I were here in the summertime, and Tim was saying, "Hey, man, Nate's looking pretty good on those pads. I was like, hey, Tim, do not bet on Nate. I said, he's going to get out. I was like, I love Nate, but he's going to get knocked out. This kid, Jake Paul, knows a little bit about sweet science. So, and then when he got knocked out, Tim called me. So you were right.
Did you ever come to any fisticuffs in the league? Did that ever happen in the 90s? It was a different time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I had a lot of fights, man. You know, we guys that, you know, and I've had some fights with my friends in the league.
Yeah.
You know, right. And, you know, I won't say their names, but I mean, we've had a lot of fights. Well, I had a few fights in training camps, few fights in the back of the locker room. But, you know, we keep that all in-house, you know. Never let anybody outside the family know what you're thinking.
That's yeah, right. That's right. Hey, KG, did you think about going anywhere other than Illinois? Seriously?
Michigan State.
Okay.
Rex, the night before I picked Illinois, I was going to Michigan State.
Really?
Michigan State, because I was going to make my decision early. You know, back then we can make it early or you make it late.
Yep.
So I went to bed, Michigan State. So I'm downstairs, right? I wake up, I go downstairs, I'm ironing my pants for school. Getting ready. My brother Keith comes downstairs and he goes, where you going, man? What is it? And I said, Illinois.
That was just it.
That's like that.
That's crazy.
I'm telling you.
That's Judd, so good.
Judd Heathcote, who was the coach at that time, he called me and he's like, Kendall, they got everybody going there. Why are you going to go there? We have everything set for you here. I'm like, yeah, I know, coach, but I feel like this is the place I need to be. So, you know, I stuck with it. So,
I could see why Judd Heathcote was our assistant coach on the Pan Am team. And I spent, you know, one summer around him. I could definitely see why you would want to go play for that guy. What a fun guy, a great coach. Had a great way about him. Yeah.
Great way about him and everything. I had a great visit up there. It's just that, I don't know, man. I just, something told me, my intuition said Illinois. Because I didn't even think about it. I just blurted out Illinois and that's where I was going.
Fantastic. Yeah. I try to explain to people, you know, because I'm sure like you get asked once a month anyway, what was it like playing with Muggsy? For people that don't, I always say, I really do believe Muggs should be in the Hall of Fame. Nobody will ever do what he did at that size, the strength he had. You know, he was like a 5'3 Jason Kidd. You know, he was everywhere. Yeah. What was your first impression, you know, when you got on the court with Muggs in training camp?
Well, remember, we used to practice at the Grady Cole Center. So I held out and I remember coming in.
Oh, that's right.
I remember coming in late and I came to the Grady Cole Center. You guys were practicing and I was in street clothes. So I had to sit out the first practice, but I couldn't believe how fast you guys were. Particularly Muggsy.
Yeah.
And the way that he controlled everything. Everybody listened to Muggsy. You know, Rex, you remember when he's like, come on, honey. Come on, honey.
Come on, honey. Just tell us to run, urging us to run.
So that's he could get you the basketball so well in scoring position. He knew how to put it right on you like a great quarterback. You know, so that you could score. He wouldn't give it to you too early, wouldn't give it to you too late, would give it to you at the right time. And that's what I enjoyed about him. And also, I agree with you, Rex. He should be in the Hall of Fame. You know, to do what he did at such a small size and to do it for so long. You know, and defensively, I can remember him. Like, let's take, for example, like guys like Rod Strickland. Rod, those guys, they didn't really want to handle the basketball against him that much because Rod Muggsy was all around you defensively, man. You know, he'd make you get that thing up. And, you know, Muggs was just a great guy off the court too, man. You know, everybody loved Muggs, man. So, you know.
I always tell people, you know, especially, you know, it was a new franchise. And, you know, every year, you know, they were trying to find, you know, stars and stars and stars. They had the biggest star the whole time in Muggsy. We could go anywhere and we go to the mall, we go out to eat. If Muggs was with us, Muggs was the one getting bombarded.
That's right. Hey, look, yeah, where's Muggs at? Where's Muggs?
Yep.
You know, I don't know if you were with us, Rex, but because I knew because I knew you got traded to Washington. My second or third year?
I think it was your second year. Midway through the second year, I think.
Okay. Well, we were in Portland, and Muggsy and JR start wrestling. Were you there?
Oh, I was there. Yeah. Before we knew it, Muggs had flipped him and put him on his head.
and JR couldn't get up.
Oh, my God.
158-pound guy, the 6'9", 265-pound guy. The Muggs dominated him.
Dominated him. Wrestling him. Just picked him up, dumped him on his head. Yeah. Hilarious. Kendall, I left and you guys got really good. Got really good for a second. And you won, you beat the Celtics in the first round, right?
Right.
But the next season, how'd you end up in Seattle?
It was my fault, Rex. This is one of the biggest regrets of my basketball career. I got two regrets. One, forcing my way out of Charlotte. Two, not signing with the Lakers when I had a chance to after they won their first championship with Kobe and Shaq. You know, I could have won two more championships with those guys. But I was, and it's totally my fault, I was enamored with, I guess, the stardom of the NBA.
I understand this completely.
Yeah,
I really do. When at the time, Kendall, and I want to let you finish because I think I know kind of where you're going. But Charlotte was a brand new team. We had no history. It didn't feel like an NBA city.
It didn't.
And so I know, and you're a city guy, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I was already gone, and I didn't know what was going on. But I also knew, you know, you kind of had an urge to be in a bigger market. That was what I thought. Yeah,
I was attracted to New York. I was attracted to L.A. I was attracted to Chicago. And where do I end up? I end up in Seattle, you know, which was a great team, by the way.
Yep.
I mean, those guys were great. But I felt like I made a huge mistake because a rising tide lifts all boats. And with Larry there, with Zoe there, with Dale Muggsy. Yep. All of Johnny Newman, all those guys, we took the Knicks to 5 games in the second round. Yeah. But I was too young to not understand that, okay, this is the place where you should stay. This is the place where you should be. You know, could there be 3 All-Stars on one team? Yeah. But I didn't see it that way. You know,
right.
I thought, like, I need to get away from Zoe and Larry and those guys.
Right.
In order for me to reach my potential. But that was totally untrue. I mean, I would have reached my potential had I played with those guys. End up in Seattle. And look, I'm not taking anything away from Seattle. I loved playing with – we were loaded, man. Jagari
Yes, Payton, we were.
John Kemp, Detlef Schrempf, Ricky Pierce, Sam Perkins. We won 63 games that next year.
Yeah.
We were the first number one seed to lose.
Number one seed, right? That's right.
But when I went to Seattle – I just never felt like I was a Sonic. I always felt like I was a Hornet, you know, and I still played hard and everything. And, you know, I had a couple good years. One good year up there anyway. And, you know, but.
You had good years every year, KJ. Yeah. Every year.
I never really wanted to sign that contract. As a matter of fact, here's another story. I balked at it. And I'm at home here in Chicago when everything goes down with the trade and everything, but I hadn't signed the contract yet. So I want to get away from everybody. And I had a boat out on 63rd Street. So I went out on my boat. Everybody's looking for me. I shut my phone off, everything. Okay. I just go out on my boat because I want to think. My mom and dad and my brother come looking for me. They find me on my boat. And my dad, son, you go back then. The deal was 7 years, $28 million. Which is nothing today.
But at the time it was like $200 million.
At the time, it would have been the highest paid guard in the league. So
right.
He said, you get the highest paid guard in the league, man, you got to sign this contract. I was like, okay, they talked me into doing it. So But it lets me know, you know, I learned something. Follow your intuition, you know. And I signed it. I went to Seattle. Did okay. Had a great time out there the first year I was there. And but I still felt like I was a Charlotte Hornet, man. I still do.
You know, you played 15 years, seven different teams, but you made you were named to the 30th anniversary team of the Hornets. How'd that make you feel?
Oh, it made me feel great, you know, because
should.
You know, they recognized, you know, I think that solidified me as a Hornet, you know, and we all want to play, you know, for one franchise. I mean, that's like the gold standard for a player,
right?
One franchise your whole career. But you know, let me know that I was part of the Hornet family forever, you know, that the team that drafted me really appreciated what I did for them.
Yeah. I know they do. The whole community does. People don't understand. A lot of people wouldn't understand that, you know, we weren't very good. We had talent. It was a different league back then.
Yeah.
When we were playing together, it was packed every single night. It was a great atmosphere. We were young. We didn't really know what we had, right?
No, we
were
young. No.
We were babies. I want to ask you real quick, because, you know, Josh and I are from Kentucky and we talk about our Wildcats quite a bit. What was it like playing for Cal in the NBA?
Actually, Cal, I had my best year under Cal.
And I know you had a good year. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Cal.
Kerry Kittles.
Jason Williams, Michael Cage.
Keith, in those days. Van Horn.
Keith Van Horn.
Okay.
Yes.
That's a squad.
Yeah, we did well. Unfortunately, we drew the Bulls in the last game.
Yeah. Talk about that for a second, Kendall, because we drew the Bulls first round when I was in Miami, and we know how that went. Talk for a second about those Bulls teams and just how good they were. I mean, I don't want to say how great somebody else was. They just were. They were.
You know, and you know, I get into the LeBron James, Michael Jordan debate all the time with my friends. As a matter of fact, they text me every day something about LeBron James. I said, listen, man, I don't want you guys to continue. Listen, I recognize LeBron James is a great player, okay? He's one of the all-time greats. But in my opinion, he is third all-time. I got Kareem and MJ ahead of him. Here's the reason why I say that, Rex. In order for you to be mentioned amongst the greatest of all time, you got to be in the 6-5 club. That means you got to have won 6 championships and 5 MVPs. I say, when he gets there, then you come talk to him. Then we can have a conversation. Because there's only 3 players to have ever done that. Russell, Jordan, and Jabbar. So until he does that, I don't want to hear it. I don't care whether he gets the points thing. Good, a great achievement. But you know, we can talk about that too, because I got my thoughts about that too. But going back to those Bulls teams, to answer your question, they were the juggernaut. You know, people say, well, LeBron, Michael Jordan never faced a juggernaut like the Golden State Warriors. Well, that's because he was the juggernaut.
Yeah.
And you look at all
that's
those
right.
You look at all those great teams that they beat, Rex, Cleveland Cavaliers. That was a great Cleveland Cavaliers team.
Great team, yeah.
The New York Knicks, great New York Knicks team. The freaking Indiana Pacers and the Davis boys, Reggie Miller, all those were great team. Then you look at Portland with Clyde Drexler. And
Blazers,
all
Cliffy, yep.
Yeah, Magic Johnson with the Lakers. You know, Charles Barkley. Those were great teams. I mean,
the bad boys.
He eliminated all of them, you know. So that team, you take two of the greatest players. Well, you can add Dennis Rodman in there as well. But you take all those three and you put them in my opinion, which is the most devastating offense in basketball, if it's run correctly, the triangle offense, you can't beat them. It's like, in that offense, Rex, and you tell me if you felt this way, like it was trying to hit Floyd Mayweather. You know how Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah. Where's it coming from?
Yeah, where's it coming from? You can't hit him. And you could not hit the Bulls in the triangle offense. And then you take Michael and Scotty and Dennis. And it was just, you know, I wasn't so much, I wanted to play against Michael and Scotty, you know, because mm-hmm. those guys were the standard at that time, you know, the measuring stick. It was that offense I was worried about. That offense would look silly, man.
Mm-hmm. You know? So, it really would.
Yeah.
Do you have a Michael story? A lot of guys have come on here and talked about like one story they remember.
I got a whole bunch of them, but I mean, here's one. We're at my house, and Rex, remember, I used to live down in Fourth Ward.
Yeah.
So MJ came to the house one day with Adolph. And
you remember Adolph? Yeah.
And we were playing cards. And he came in, they got there about 11 o'clock, and we're playing Tom. And I'm beating him out of his money, man. You know? So this guy stays in my house until 7 o'clock in the morning until he wins all of his money back. You know how most people rex me, hey, Michael Jordan's at my house.
Yeah.
Most people, I was ready for Michael Jordan to leave. I was like,
I'm with you.
That lets you know how crazy of a competitor he was. He wouldn't leave until he won.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if I could pass it.
Do you have a Rex talks about some, and we ask guys a welcome to the NBA moment where you were, you know, you had a great rookie year. You came in on fire, but do you have a time when you came in and you were like, wow, this is okay. This is the NBA.
When I forget the guy's name is, not that story. Here's when the Rex, the first time my rookie year, we went to LA.
Okay.
And, you know, I had been around MJ here up here in Chicago, so I wasn't, you know, in awe of MJ. I'd seen a few things, but I never seen Magic Johnson before. When Magic Johnson ran out of that locker room, when we were at the Forum, he looked like Ty Mack. You remember the movie, The Last Dragon, Ty Mack, when he had the glow around him?
Yeah.
Magic Johnson looked just like that to me. I couldn't believe how big he was.
Yeah,
I was,
right.
No way. I was like, I've seen him on TV for so many years, but I couldn't believe how big Magic was, man.
Yeah.
And the control he had over that Lakers offense and, you know, the way that they respected him and everything. That was like, okay, I'm really here now.
That was, you make a great, great point. I remember playing them my rookie year when Kareem was, it was his last year. They weren't, you know, really great at that point. They were still really good, but they had Worthy, AC, Magic, Byron Scott, and Kareem. And their spacing was such that, like you talked about Floyd Mayweather, you're just like, who's rushing into the post? Because they just picked out the mismatch they wanted to. Yeah. And but it was, I was like, holy shit, this is the Los Angeles Showtime Lakers.
Yeah, that's right, man. That's right. I told Magic that story when he was here for the All-Star game a couple of years back about how in awe I was of him the first time I saw him.
You know? Yeah, shoot. Unbelievable. Yeah. All right. I know we can talk to you all day. I want to get to, we ask two questions to wrap things up usually. What's your favorite movie, KG?
Mo Better Blues.
Okay. Okay, Spike. Okay, Spike.
Mo Better Blues, man. You know why? You know why? Because I'm a city guy. Uh-huh. I love jazz like that. And Bleak was sort of like, I had the same type of personality. You know, I used to be a player back in the days.
I love it.
That way anymore. Rex, you wouldn't believe me. I believe it.
Hey, if Muggs can settle down, anybody can settle down.
That character was so me, you know, and I love the storyline of Washington and all those guys. So,
what about front row center to see any singer, a group, a speaker, a sports, anything you want, front row center, dead or alive?
Prince. I saw Prince a couple of times here in Chicago. Man just put on a performance.
Yeah.
3.5 hours straight, and you were on the edge of your seat every song, every time, every, you know. And then when I played a season in Minnesota, I got a chance to meet him. you know. And, you know, it was just powerful, man. I mean, his presence, his aura, you know. So Prince would be that guy.
All right. KG, great answer.
KG, thanks for doing this, brother. You got to come back and do it again.
Yeah, thank you, man. Thank you. I appreciate it. I had no idea you were in Brooklyn, man.
I'm in Brooklyn. When you come through, let's get together.
I will. You know, when I lived, when I played for Jersey, I lived on 43rd 11th Avenue for 6 years in Manhattan. Yeah, I didn't live in Jersey.
All right.
City guy, bro.
All right, bro. Much love, KG.
All right, man.
Kendall Gill. What about that, Josh?
This brings me back, man. Just brings me back, you know. If I'd known then that I'd be on some thing called a podcast with Rex Chapman and Kendall Gill, I've been like, what do you mean? I can't. It just brings me back. What a good dude.
Yeah, good guy. So he was Kendall always carried himself very maturely. He didn't joke around and play around a lot. He was about his business and he had other interests. And I think that it kind of threw people. Most athletes, professional athletes anyway, are pretty one-dimensional. And Kendall was not. He had other interests. He's a boxer. I mean, when you've boxed and sparred and whatnot, there's probably little else that will scare you in sports, right?
Yeah. Once you know you got that in your bag.
Right.
Yeah, that's why I asked, like, if you ever, you know, people are like, what are you doing? Tack. Ooh, sorry, Kendall. Right. Because once you've mastered the sweet science, you're a problem.
Yeah, exactly. I remember one day a teammate got in a fight. I won't tell you. I'll tell you the teammate. I won't tell you who he got in a fight with. But people were constantly always – Penny Hardaway could get under people's skin, opponents, teammates from time to time. And every now and then somebody might just square up with Penny. Well, someone squared up with Penny one day in practice. And he dropped a great big guy that can fight with a combination where we all went, oh shit, he can box. And
red flag.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know.
But yeah, so you know, because most guys, you know, if I fight you, I'm not going to box you. I'm probably going to tackle you and swing wildly and all of that shit. Penny knew space and distance, and he could do it all. But anyway, you want to do this again next week, Josh?
I sure would, Rex.
Let's do it. Well, that was Kendall Gill, episode 73. Meet us back here next week for another episode of the Rex Chapman Show with Super Josh Hopkins, powered by basketballnews.com.